What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. The United Methodists are in town in Charlotte for the next 2 weeks. So I did. Oh, hang on a second. I wasn't even. Well, okay. Yeah. I'll do it now. I'll do it live. The Methodists are in town, the United Methodist Church. They're having their big convention. I've covered it a couple different days over the last week or so. And I was watching a little bit yesterday on the live stream being done by the pastor from Oklahoma that we had on Monday, Jeffrey Rickman. And so he was doing, he hosts the Plain Spoken podcast, and I was watching it on his podcast, his YouTube channel. He was live streaming it. And so it's very like bureaucratic, legalese kind of stuff where, you know, motions are made and stuff, and they're just setting up the sort of the rules for how the whole convention's going to work for the next 2 weeks before they get to the controversial stuff. And in case you are wondering as to how this thing is going, one of the first things that they did apparently was to mandate that when people come up to speak at the microphones, when they make their motions or raise a point of order or something, they have to give their pronouns. Yeah, that's where they are at the United Methodist Church. That's some bang up work, guys. Good job. You got so they get up there and you get these. Like, really, you got like these 75, 80 year old, you know, people coming out and they're like, my pronoun is a woman. I'm not sure. No. Because then everybody's like, what's a woman? I don't know what a woman is. No, they have to declare their pronouns, their race. And then they did a motion to do, what is it, the beginning of the conference before, like when they call it all to order, you know? They have to do a land acknowledgement. So, yeah, they're going to start off with a land acknowledgement, which, like, that might actually be a bit difficult because I'm not sure of all of the historical background, because they said it has to be done by a representative of, like, the indigenous people that populated this land before the Methodists came and conquered it all. I don't know. Otherwise, why are you doing a land? Anyway, they're doing this land acknowledgement. And so I just pointed out that might be problematic because you've got like the Catawba Indian Nation, right? They claim a lot of this territory. And it's weird because like I thought they a lot of them converted to Mormonism, I thought. But anyway, the Catawbas, but also you have the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians, and they would fight each other and stuff. They were always like in territorial disputes and such. Yeah. So I don't know who they're going to get to deliver the land acknowledgement at the beginning of the Methodist Church convention here in Charlotte, but best of luck to you guys. You're doing great work over there. Yeah. Kind of know how that's going to turn out. Alrighty, so let's go up to the great state of Manhattan, New York, where Alvin Bragg is proving to the world that he too is an election denier. It's true. This is the premise of his case against Donald Trump. You know my view. Well, I mean, I have a more nuanced view of Donald Trump. I see him for, I think, the things that he does well. I see him for the things he does not do well. I criticize him, and for people who love Trump, they hate me for that. And I defend Trump when he is worthy of defending. And then that makes a lot of the people suffering from Trump derangement syndrome, that makes them mad at me. So I feel like I'm walking this line pretty well. But he's up there, and this case that Alvin Bragg has brought is complete crap. Okay, this case, whatever you want to think of the other cases, right? The documents case, What's the other one? Oh, the one out of Atlanta, right? The insurrection case or whatever. Fannie Willis is trying them on. Like, whatever the merits of all of those other cases, I try to look at each of these proceedings individually for the facts surrounding the individual indictments and charges. And this one, I come down on the side with Andy McCarthy, former federal prosecutor, National Review commentator, and columnist, and he dubs this, and he calls it a farce. He says it's an outrageous conspiracy theory, and when you follow the breakdown that McCarthy lays out, according to law, it appears he is clearly correct. Clearly correct. He's trying to, this DA, who's a leftist, he's trying to hoodwink the jury into believing, number one, that it's a crime for a candidate to, quote, conspire with others to suppress politically damaging information. That is not a crime. It's not a crime. And you can use the word conspire in order to send this message that, ooh, there's some illegal activity. But there's nothing illegal about trying to keep damaging information about you or your boss, if he's a candidate, your candidate, to try to keep that suppressed. How you do that, now you may run afoul of law in how you do that, but just the idea that you are trying to suppress bad information about your candidate, that is not illegal. Number two, Donald Trump was charged with such a conspiracy in the indictment that has resulted in the ongoing trial. He is not actually charged with conspiracy. That's not a charge. In point of fact, there is no such information suppression conspiracy crime in the law, and the indictment against Trump does not charge a conspiracy. It charges 34 counts of falsifying business records with fraudulent intent to commit or conceal another crime. So now you have to go to the other crime. You have to examine what is this other crime that he's attempting to conceal, because the conspiring part, not against the law, unless, of course, you're trying to conceal a crime. Well, what is the other crime? Well, guess what? That's not a crime either. That wasn't a crime either. And by the way, Bragg isn't even allowed to try a case, because if it was illegal, it would only be under federal statutes, and the Fed said, we're not trying the case. It's not illegal. So he's trying in a state court to obtain a verdict, a guilty verdict, for a charge that isn't even a state charge. That's the, quote, other crime. Okay, if you're listening to this podcast, you are obviously paying attention to the world around us. You also have really great taste, I might add. But if you haven't started getting prepared for various emergencies, I gotta ask, what are you waiting for? Please call my friends Bill and Jan at Carolina Readiness Supply, and they'll help get you started. If you have no idea how to start, they can help you. If you're an experienced prepper, they can help you too. Being prepared is just smart. We've already established that you're smart. I mean, you listen to this podcast after all. So let's put those smarts into action. Go to CarolinaReadiness.com. That's CarolinaReadiness.com, or call them at 828-226-7239. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies, as well as educational materials that you're going to need for any kind of emergency. Veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Alrighty, so in New York, the Manhattan District Attorney, this progressive Democrat, Alvin Bragg, bringing charges against Donald Trump, and I talked about the timing of it. You know, right? They had to kind of find a way around the statute of limitations and all of that. And the statute does not criminalize what Bragg claims Trump did. And Bragg's claim is that Trump suppressed politically damaging information. Okay, that's what he is claiming Trump did. But the statute, the state statute, does not make that a crime. The invocation of it still calls for Bragg to enforce federal election law, which he has no jurisdiction to do. And again, the feds did not prosecute because they said there wasn't evidence of a crime. The election law that Bragg invokes is, in fact, a misdemeanor, the one that he can't enforce. But that's still just a misdemeanor. So Bragg is trying to exacerbate a single misdemeanor falsification of business records into 34 felony counts. Right? This is like a, it's like a magic act. You take the misdemeanor and prestidigitation, 34 felony counts. And the reason he's doing it is because he's saying Trump was trying to commit or conceal another crime. Well, what's the other crime? Well, that, if it were a crime, would be a misdemeanor as well. So somehow or another, we end up with at most two misdemeanors turning into 34 felony counts. Okay. But and the word conspiracy does not even appear in the grand jury indictment. The jurors, Andy McCarthy at National Review, says the trial jurors could be forgiven if, after hearing the prosecutor's opening statement and sitting through 2 days of testimony, they believe Trump has been charged with conspiracy to steal the 2016 election. That's what Bragg's minions keep telling them. And Judge Juan Merchan is allowing them to do it, right? The judge should be shutting that down, but the judge is not. Juries take cues from the judge. If Merchan won't put a stop to what the prosecutors are doing, then the jurors are going to figure that conspiracy must be the charge in this case, even though it is not. The misdemeanor can be enhanced into a felony under State Statute 17510. If the intent to defraud, quote, includes an intent to commit another crime or to aid or conceal the commission thereof, right? So you can elevate to a felony if the other crime is attempting to conceal it. The indictment does not state what other crime Trump allegedly committed. They don't say. This is why it is constitutionally insufficient. Now, McCarthy says Bragg is not an idiot. He is a highly experienced prosecutor. He did not forget to include this vital detail. He intentionally omitted it because the crime he wants to allege is a federal campaign finance violation. And as a county district attorney, Bragg is well aware that he has no jurisdiction to enforce federal law. And if you doubt that, take a look at what's been going on with Texas' attempt to enforce immigration law, right? You literally have the administration saying that the states cannot enforce federal law, and they are suing to prevent that from happening. Meanwhile, you've got Bragg here trying to enforce federal law against Trump as the underlying, quote, other charge. He's hiding the ball. That's what this is, hiding the ball. He did not acknowledge in the indictment that he was trying to enforce federal campaign law. He never says that in the indictment or in his statement that he attached to the indictment. Alvin Bragg, the DA up in Manhattan, is not an idiot. So says Andy McCarthy. He's been hiding the ball. In the indictment against Donald Trump, he never tells the jury that he is trying to enforce federal campaign law after the feds said, we're not going to do that because there was no law violation. And as I recently detailed, he says in his statement of facts, he purported to establish that Trump had violated federal campaign law by pointing out that Trump's fixer slash lawyer, Michael Cohen, pled guilty to federal campaign crimes. And that's true. Cohen did, right? Went to jail for a little while for it. But Alvin Bragg has to know that Cohen's guilty plea is not admissible evidence against Trump. Cohen saying he did something doesn't make Trump guilty. Cohen pled guilty to those charges also because he was trying to avoid prison for other crimes that he committed. And he was hoping to sell himself to the feds as a cooperating witness against Trump. Alvin Bragg must have calculated that, number one, the DOJ would not complain that Bragg is illegitimately trying to enforce federal law, probably because the target is Donald Trump. And number two, Bragg must have calculated that he was likely to get a compliant Democrat judge who would not challenge the usurpation of federal authority. And with Judge Juan Merchan, jackpot. Even now, Bragg is reluctant to be transparent about what he's doing. After all, what he's trying to enforce is not federal campaign law as it exists. It's sort of a faux federal law, a federal law, if you will, that Bragg is kind of making up as he goes along. Under actual federal election law, payment of a non-disclosure agreement that Trump paid Stormy Daniels, right? That is not in dispute. Now, whether or not there was an affair or not, that is in dispute, but he paid the NDA. That is not a campaign expenditure under federal law. Under actual federal election law, even if something is a campaign expenditure, disclosure does not have to be made instantly. It has to be made in the next reporting period, which, in connection with the Stormy Daniels NDA, would have been months after the 2016 election. So what's the problem here? Well, how is it that Trump is influencing the election by calling this a lawyer fee, right, in his business books, right, in the documents that the DA is going after him for falsifying, calls it a legal fee, this NDA, when actually it's a campaign expenditure. Even if it was a campaign expenditure, which it's not, but even if it was, you wouldn't even know about it till after the election. So how is it usurping the election? Because had he filed it the way you wanted him to file it, it would not have been known until after the election anyway. Which, by the way, it's still not necessary to file it as a campaign expenditure because it wasn't. It's an NDA. In Bragg's version of federal campaign law, not only do payments to porn stars who extort hush money constitute campaign expenditures, but the moment such payments are made, the candidate has to notify the FEC. That's not the law, but that's what Bragg would have you believe. And this way, the New York Times and the MSNBC folks can go ahead and give it all the publicity so as to, you know, tank Trump's chances. Like, that's really what they're talking about. Let's see here. The other crime Trump was trying to commit or conceal was a violation of New York State election law. The other crime, which says a person is guilty of a conspiracy if he agrees with one or more people to, quote, promote or prevent the election of any purpose or any person to a public office by unlawful means. Okay, so this is statute 17-152. And so what Bragg is saying is that Trump entered a scheme specifically for purposes of influencing the 2016 election. That's the, quote, other crime. It's a state statute. This is what Bragg is trying to play fast and loose with. But it's not a crime for a candidate and his supporters to try to influence an election. That's literally what political campaigns do. But, Bragg says, well, under 17-152, such influencing becomes a criminal conspiracy if it's done by unlawful means. Okay. Well, what are the unlawful means? Well, that brings us right back to square one, right? The unlawful means was Trump's supposed violation of a federal campaign law, which did not happen, and Bragg cannot prosecute. This is circular. There's no difference between Bragg's direct reliance on federal campaign law and his invocation of state election law. Andy McCarthy goes on to say Trump did not violate federal campaign law, which is why neither the DOJ nor the Federal Elections Commission took enforcement action. And even when the state statute 17-152 applies, prosecutors still have to show that the conspirators agreed to do something unlawful. It's simply not unlawful to agree to suppress politically damaging information. That's not against the law. So the conspiracy offense, by the way, is a misdemeanor. And for that, Bragg is charging Trump with 34 felonies that add up to 136 years in prison. And at the heart of all of this is an election denialism, which I'm old enough to remember was a threat to our democracy. Andy McCarthy at National Review, this would be 2 days ago. He's got another piece called Alvin Bragg, Election Denier. He says an elected progressive Democrat district attorney's version of Stop the Steal is what this case is about. The fraud that Democrats claim leaves our democracy hanging by a thread. He says, don't take my word for it. You got to just read his statement of facts that Bragg published in conjunction with the indictment. He says the fact that his publication of such a document exists is in and of itself a tell that something very peculiar is going on here. See, normally in a big case, the grand jury returns a narrative indictment in which, and I've read from these before, I've been reading these things for decades now, and they describe the background facts, right? They do a chronological detail, and it puts the charges, the counts, in context. But that is not what happened here. Instead, Bragg had the grand jury file a bare-bones indictment, which lays out little more than the statutory charge that Trump, or that Bragg claims, excuse me, that Bragg claims Trump violated 34 times. The grand jury's indictment does not tell us a story. He goes on to say that the statement of facts, the separate document, that describes what Bragg sees as the story. And again, let's put aside now the fact that Bragg is trying to enforce federal law and look at why he's trying to enforce it. It's that his theory of the case is that Trump stole the 2016 election. According to Bragg, 2016 was so tight, right, that the election outcome turned on any failure of compliance with federal disclosure laws that would have affected the outcome, right? That's why Trump won. His theory makes neither legal nor factual sense because the payments to the women do not technically qualify as campaign expenses, which is why the feds did not proceed against Trump. And even if they did, there's no disclosure obligation until the reporting period after the 2016 election took place in 2017. So the hush money scheme could not possibly have affected the outcome of the election, which is why Bragg is left to explain the anomaly that, in connection with a claim that Trump stole the 2016 election, that the offenses he charges did not occur until 2017. Obviously, you can't steal something in 2016 by actions you don't take until the next year. Trump says Democrats rigged the 2020 election by suppressing unsavory information about Biden family influence peddling, right? But that's Bragg's theory of how Trump supposedly stole 2016 information suppression, right? Trump is unfit for the office, but Bragg, oh, he's a Democrat hero. Because it's different when Democrats do it. What about Hillary Clinton, right? Steele dossier, 2016, right? The FEC actually fined the Clinton campaign for that. Now, if Bragg is theorizing that Trump falsely booked payments as legal expenses rather than reimbursement for a non-disclosure deal, why isn't he going after Hillary Clinton? And he doesn't have a case against her either, but at least Clinton was found to have violated federal election disclosure laws. His only responsibility, by the way, Alvin Bragg, is to the people of Manhattan. That's it. Not even New York City, not even the state, right? He's a county attorney. County DA. So he is responsible to those voters, not to Democrats all across America that are mad that Trump beat Clinton. Right? It wasn't even close in Manhattan. Right? Who, on whose behalf is Bragg bringing this election theft allegation anyway? Right? Who is the aggrieved party in Manhattan? This is an abusive case. Trump is an election denier, Andy McCarthy says, and for his trouble, Democrats have indicted him four times and labeled him the most dangerous threat to democracy in American history. Bragg is also an election denier, but Democrats have made him their champion because it's different when Democrats do it. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.